What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at WeightWatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
Hello and welcome to a free bonus episode of the Katie Halper Show. I interview Ryan Grimm, an Intercept reporter who has actually interviewed Julian Assange at the embassy, at the Ecuadorian embassy in England. And we talked about Julian Assange and the book that Ryan is working on. So thanks a lot. And of course, even though this is a free bonus, please feel free, of course, to support the Katie Halper Show's Patreon at patreon.com/the Katie Halper Show. Again, that's patreon.com/the Katie Halper Show. And stand by for some more Patreon-only bonus episodes, including an interview I did with Daniel Denver and Luke Savage. So, Ryan, you are a journalist at The Intercept, and you're a pretty prolific journalist, actually, and you're writing a book. So tell us first about what you're working on, and then and the reason I really want to have you on, well, I've been wanting to have you on for a while, and we've been trying to do this for a while, but I want to have you on to talk about the Julian Assange, the latest with Julian Assange. And we're going to get back to this, but I just want to share with people that I remember it was July, and I remember seeing this tweet of yours that was kind of like gave me the chills. And it said, whenever governments go after the press, they find examples that will set a precedent, but have a unique set of facts that dissuade the rest of the media from defending against the assault. Assange is perfect for that. We're all sitting back and watching them boil us. So we'll get back to that in a second. And that was very prescient and very accurate at the time. But tell me what you're, just tell people what you're up to right now before we jump into the Assange thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a pretty wide range of stuff that I cover, so foreign policy, civil liberties. But my main beat the last like year or so, couple years, and depending on how you count it, stretching back maybe 12 years, has been covering the left wing of the Democratic Party and their ongoing battle with the centrists in the party. And, you know, for most of the time that I've been covering that fight, the centrists have been just romping, just annihilating them. You know, it's Rahm Emanuel against Raul Grijalva, not much of a fair fight. And only in the last year, 2 years or so has, maybe starting with the, actually with 2015, with the rise of the Sanders campaign, has it been more of a fair fight and been something that people are now paying attention to more broadly. So I decided why not turn a lot of the reporting that I've done over the last decade into a book for, you know, for people who kind of started following politics either in 2015, 2016 during the Sanders fight or after Trump was elected, got triggered into activism.
Triggering
to let them know like what's been going on, what's been tried, what's been happening in the couple decades before that.
Right. And what's the book called?
It's called We've Got People, which I ripped off from Ocasio-Cortez's viral campaign ad. You know, at the climax of it, she says something like, this is a battle between, people and money. We've got people, they've got money.
Right.
Which I thought, with a lot of what she does, it's good messaging. It encapsulated the situation in a couple of words. And actually when I went back to look for it, my first thought was that her quote was, "We have people, they have money."
Mm-hmm.
I went back and looked and transcribed it. And I was like, oh, it's "We've got people." And actually that's better. Like "We've got people" is better. Like she has a knack for it. Like that.
So you thought it was "We have people," but it was "We've got people."
Right. But her version just kind of rolls better off the tongue.
We've got people. Yeah.
Right. I mean,
yeah, it does. And it kind of reminds me of, just remind, I didn't think this, but the Chelsea Manning thing, we got this. Is that, that's what she says, right?
Yeah.
Just remind me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she is very good at, Ocasio-Cortez is great, a great speaker. She's like a little bit, I've said this before, she's like the good version of Trump in that she is so, like, people try so hard to troll her and she just dominates them. Like, it's pathetic. They have no chance. Her enemies hate her. They have no idea how to deal with her. What the difference is, like, she's, I think a lot of people have a crush on her. I don't think anyone has a crush on, I mean, I'm sure there's everyone has their thing, but I don't think a lot of people who hate Trump have a crush on him. But yeah, and she's, they're just very effective communicators. But of course, you know, she's good and he's bad.
There's that.
Yeah, there's that. So when are you going to be done with this book and how can people access it?
Any day. It'll be out May 28th.
Oh, great.
And so it'll be everywhere, hopfully.
Yeah. Get on the Katie Allen Show, live reading.
Strong Arm Press is publishing it. So if people wanted to like learn more about it, they could go to the Strong Arm Press website, which is interesting. And we should talk about this someday too. It's a kind of a reader backed independent publisher that's trying to create a new kind of publishing model.
It's like the Bernie, it's the not me, us of book publishing.
Yeah. Right.
So let's talk about Julian Assange and that quote, that tweet that you had written back in July, again, which is whenever governments go after the press, they find examples that will set a precedent but have a unique set of facts that dissuade the rest of the media from defending against the assault. Assange is perfect for that. We're all sitting back and watching them boil us. So what did you mean by that?
Yeah, and you've kind of seen that play out in the conversation since he was arrested, with a lot of people who wanted to see him arrested, saying, "Well, look, he wasn't arrested for publishing. He wasn't charged with publishing. He's charged with being a criminal and being a hacker."
Right.
And you're like, "Well, okay, what would the charge be if he were charged with publishing? You know, First Amendment's pretty clear." Congress shall make no law, you know, restricting the freedom of the press. So there is no statute on the book that says you are guilty of publishing. So the idea that they didn't charge him with a non-existent statute isn't exculpatory when it comes to whether or not this was an assault on the free press. So because there's no law against publishing, you have to then find some part of the process of reporting and publishing that is that you can then criminalize. And so as I had predicted, they went and found the least sympathetic thing that he had done. Because if you're trying to attack a principle, you don't attack it head on. You don't say, "I don't believe in the freedom of the press." You say, I cherish the freedom of the press, but this is not journalism. This doesn't count as being a member of the press. And so that puts defenders of the freedom of the press in a difficult position, because we have to defend what they've been able to select as the most odious thing that they've been able to find that he did. And then they are also able to frame it in their own indictment in a way that, you know, fits their argument the best. So what they did, they went out and found that in order to try to protect her identity, Chelsea was trying to use a different account than her own.
Chelsea Manning, obviously.
Chelsea Manning, trying to access these documents and download them without being caught, and so wanted to use a different account. There's a big question over whether or not the account that she was trying to get would have given her additional access. That kind of changes the nature of the password hacking that you're doing. If you're hacking a password to get access to something you don't already have access to, you know, in other words, you know, that's different than trying to get access discreetly to something that you already have access to.
Right.
From the indictment, it appears like she was trying to discreetly, you know, get access to things that she already had access to. And in order to do that, she wanted an admin account that would be more anonymous so that she could kind of sift through things and then download. And Assange said, "Well, let me, you know, hash this stuff and let me see if I can crack the password for you." He ultimately failed at doing that. Now, no journalist is going to go out and defend the idea of trying to hack into accounts or or break passwords or that sort of thing. But it's not hard to go from there to other source protection measures that not only do all journalists participate in, but all journalists ought to participate in as best practice source protection. In other words, if a source reaches out and emails me, I might say, hey, don't email me from your work account. Don't email me from your Gmail.
Right.
Download Signal.
Right.
And text me there. According to the premise of the DOJ indictment, I'm now engaged in a conspiracy to further whatever, you know, crimes this source goes on to commit in downloading documents. Now, if a source comes to me and says, the agency I work for is breaking the law, you know, they're separating children, they're killing people, or whatever, you know, whatever they say they're doing. And I say to them, do you have documents that back up your assertions that you're making, for which any good journalist should do, because you want to demonstrate to the public that what you're publishing is true, and you want to be sure yourself that it's true. You could very easily read that as encouragement to go obtain these documents. So you're now, again, now you're engaged in this conspiracy. You're helping with the security around it and the anonymity around it. Now you're encouraging to go find these documents. And you've just described pretty much every practice that has led to any national security story that has won a Pulitzer over five, six years or so. So, they try to elevate a thing that is, that can be spun on its face to be awful, and say, oh, and then get the rest of the media say, yes, that's awful. We were defenders of the free press, but not defenders of that. And then you have a couple different questions. One is, what do foreign countries do with this? You know, we're sending a signal to authoritarians who are not going to parse the indictment. They're going to read it.
Right.
I can crack down on the press now because the protections around that freedom are as much norms as they are anything else.
Right.
But then separately, the next time the government wants to go after a reporter, they can, you know, call up this indictment and be like, look, they were using Signal. They were using secure Dropbox. They were encouraging on their website that people leak classified information that implicates them in the conspiracy as
right.
well.
Right. It's the Assange principle or whatever.
Right.
So can you, it's funny when I saw that, I actually thought you meant, it's funny. I thought you meant goes up to the press. They find examples that will set a precedent, but have a unique set of facts that dissuade the rest of the media from defending against the assault. Assange is perfect for that. We're all sitting back and watching them boil us. I actually thought you meant they were choosing to go after Assange.
Yes. So that too. Right. So, they wanted Assange
right.
anyway, because they've seen him as this, I don't know about existential, but extraordinary threat. You have to think back to the number of stories that he's broken right. over the last decade or so. It matches and exceeds any news outlet in right. the world over the last decade. You sparked the Arab Spring and changed elections. Cost dictators their positions and on. And so, yes, they wanted Assange for that reason. They also wanted him because he's an asshole. And because he's such an asshole, he has made enemies of everybody he's ever come into contact with. I mean, I interviewed him in maybe 5-6 years ago in the Ecuadorian embassy, wrote a fairly positive story out of the interview, which is about whatever he was in some beef with Google at the time. And he jumps on Twitter and just starts like dragging the story.
Right. You can leak any of your personal info, right?
Right. And I don't dislike, dislike him as a result of it, but he's a jerk. He's a jerk to even people who are close to him. So because of that, a lot of people hold grudges against him. The U.S. Justice Department knew that he wouldn't have a whole lot of defenders.
Right.
When they decided to come after him. So, right, exactly. You pick the unpopular kid in the class.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Go after it rather than the cool kid. You know, if they tried to put Jake Tapper in prison for report, for the same type of thing, like working with sources to securely leak information, covering their tracks through there would be an absolute eruption in the media. Like, how dare you attack somebody who's, a journalist in good standing in our community?
Right.
And even me, probably, like, at this point, like, even if they, like, I'm not like the most popular journalist, but like, people like me more than they like Julian Assange.
Right.
He just has a unique ability to piss people off.
Yeah.
And friends, he's, and like, allies alike.
Right. And he's kind of weird. Like, he looks, I mean, I'm just being honest. It sounds like he kind of looks weird. Like,
also, these credible sexual assault allegations hanging over him does not make you any more sympathetic as a figure.
Right. Although, of course, it doesn't make you more guilty of the things that you're So but
that's the point. They want somebody who
people
will indict for.
Right. He's a good poster child, or, he's the worst poster child for people who care about free press. And he's the best poster child for people who want to go after people like him.
Right. He's his own worst enemy. He's our worst enemy. And he's the worst enemy of powerful people. And so they're the ones that have gone after him.
Right. It's funny, because when you posted that, I remember feeling like a little guilty when I read that. And I remember being like, I really should defend him more. I mean, not just self-aggrandizing, like, oh, he's going to get the Katie Halper, critical Katie Halper boost. But I remember being like, and we see this with a lot of different people, where it's like a real focus on the messenger as opposed to the message.
Right.
Assange and message is message, I guess. Like a real smearing of people, which there's a lot of groupthink and peer pressure to kind of like not talk to these people. And certain things are deemed like conspiracy theories that are unacceptable, whereas other things are just as credible or just as non-credible, and they're accepted. It really is like you were saying, a popularity contest.
Right. It's no fun to go out and defend that person in particular. Right. You're defending a principle. If you think about some of the stuff he said during the 2016 campaign and after that, all the Seth Rich stuff that he was floating, like, you don't want to seem like you're co-signing any of that, but like you said, you have to look past that. Otherwise, after they come for him, they come for everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a basic principle. Like, what's that? I don't know if it's Voltaire. I think it's probably not, but it always gets attributed to him. First, they can't. I mean, I don't care what you, what is it? I may not agree with you, but I'll fight till the death to defend your right to say it. It's funny, because all these liberals who, in theory, are really, really care about that stuff, it's not that surprising, but are celebrating Assange's arrest. And his lawyers are saying, and of course, I'm prone to believe what they're saying, that, this was a violation of international law, the way that he was removed from the embassy. I know you're not a lawyer or a law professor, but the thing that they did arrest him for, is that something that there's like agreement for that it's illegal, or is that the precedent?
Yes and no. So they charged him under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, which, is one of the most vague and overbroad laws that we have on the books. It's the one that they threw at Aaron Swartz when they drove him to suicide.
Another journalist and hacker.
And there's been a push to reform CFAA that has not succeeded, and to try to narrow the scope of it, because it, depending on how you interpret it, you can, we're probably committing crimes, multiple CFAA crimes right now as we speak. Arguably, if you disrespect the terms of service of like Walmart.com, you're somehow engaged in some CFAA crime. To try to crack a password would be a violation of the CFAA. Tax fraud is also illegal, but nobody thinks that Al Capone was targeted for his tax fraud just because they were doing a random audit of his books. So it's like, okay, yes, like they probably were committing some CFAA violation.
Right.
But you are arguably committing CFAA violations all the time when you're using Signal to try to cloak identity and using other tools on the internet to try to mask your identity to stay away from authorities because you're trying to obtain and publish secret information, which is journalism. So that's why I'd say yes and no to that question.
Right. So there's a lot of discretion, obviously.
That's the thing. And also they can, they have a lot of discretion around the counts. Like there it's not clear what counts as a single attempt. You know, what if they tried 30 times to crack the password? Is that 30 counts?
Right.
At 5 years each or whatever? You know, so it really allows prosecutors to mess with people's entire lives by deciding how many counts they want to throw of the CFAA at them.
Right. And you also tweeted, the only people behind bars for this heinous murder exposed by Chelsea Manning and WikiLeaks are the people who exposed it. So that's another thing that is part of the story, right? Because he's not, I mean, the reason he was gone after in the first place was because of WikiLeaks, and what really put them on the map, right, was the leaking of this information that involved Chelsea Manning and Snowden, right? So can you just set up a little bit what happened in the first place, why we're even here, why Assange was in the embassy, why Manning is in jail, and why Snowden is he still in Russia?
He is, yeah.
Yeah, and why Snowden's in Russia?
And so this would have been 2010, I believe. So I think this was the thing that Manning and WikiLeaks Assange were communicating about at the time that of this indictment. And Manning had found a video from an attack helicopter of these Americans gunning down unarmed or mostly unarmed innocent civilians in Baghdad, including a Reuters photographer.
And joining me now for more details on both the release and the video, Julian Assange. So let's go back to July 2007 when this attack first occurred. The military at that time had said that every person who was killed was an insurgent and that the military had abided by the rules of engagement. We know now that they weren't insurgents. Now, we know now that two Reuters employees had been killed. And perhaps some of the most disturbing footage of the video shows a van pulling up when one of the Reuters employees is wounded on the side of the road, and they try to help him, and then U.S. soldiers fire on that van. There are also children in that vehicle. Can you just elaborate for us on this specific scenario?
Yes, I can't see any excuse for this. In the first part, you can make some argument that they didn't really pay attention. It was the heat of war, and they confused a telephoto camera for an RPG. That's a hard argument to make, but you can make it. A difficult argument because there's only two people who appear to have weapons out of a much larger group, and they appear to be acting peacefully. But for the attack on a van, rescuing a wounded person, totally prone, weaponless, the people in the van are weaponless, I cannot see any excuse for this whatsoever.
It's a horrifying massacre, an extended massacre, carried out cavalierly. And published by WikiLeaks, and he came, if I recall, to the National Press Club in Washington to unveil it. And it was a huge deal. If people want to argue about the technicalities of it, it certainly appears to be a massive war crime.
Right.
And it certainly is a massacre. There was no accountability for that massacre. Yet, as we speak today, the two people most responsible for the publication, the whistleblowing of that massacre, are behind bars. Chelsea Manning is back in prison, and Julian Assange is in prison. And so the only accountability for that has gone to them.
And of course, Chelsea Manning, I mean, all these terrible things have happened, right? So she was suicidal. So their response to that was putting her into solitary confinement.
Right.
Which is considered torture by lots of bodies.
Right.
Did you see the video, right, of Assange being dragged out?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was so disturbing. Like,
right.
It really affected me on a visceral level. And I guess part of the point is, I mean, no, but that's, it's good. It's okay to be affected by visceral level. I was just going to say, like, we're not, the biography isn't that important of the person, but it is because, you know, the US government and the British government and Ecuador, the Ecuadorian government, those are governments that are supposed to be following the law as opposed to kind of rogue individuals.
Right.
So, and yeah, do you, his, I guess he's, and they couldn't find his cat. I don't even like cats, but that made me really sad. I guess, well, he had a cat that had.
I think my understanding is that he was kind of neglecting that cat.
Well, it'd be funny. They were like, this is about the right of cats.
Yeah.
We're cat positive, and he was not taking care of his cat. Yeah. Oh, he was neglecting the cat. I mean, the guy must be crazy. I mean, he was in jail. Not in jail. He was in the embassy for seven years.
It was like jail. So this embassy, it's a little flat, like the pictures that you've seen of it. You know, as you walk up those stairs there, the embassy's off to the left. That's it. Like, it's on that floor. There are.
Oh, right. Cause you were there. Right.
Yeah. It's his room. Like, his room is there with that balcony there when you first walk in, though he wasn't on the balcony. So he wasn't getting sunlight. You walk down a hallway. There's a bathroom. There's another room that has like a table and some, some workspace. And that's basically it. Like, it's basically a two bedroom flat.
Mm-hmm.
And not only was he in there, but the diplomatic corps is trying to do whatever it does in for Ecuador in London. And that was an awfully tense situation. You know, he's famously, is not hygienic.
Yeah.
And so here you are coming to work every day with a guy who lives there with a cat that he's not taking great care of, not taking care of himself. You know, he couldn't go, you know, he didn't go to the dentist for 7 years, you know, although some of our listeners probably haven't, but they should.
Yeah.
You know, you can't leave for any reason.
Could he go on the balcony? Did he just not go because he didn't like it?
He could have. I think he was nervous about what would happen if he did. I talked to one of the police officers who was like, this is the most boring job I could possibly have. Like, they had cops outside of it constantly.
Right.
Just in case he, and it's like a block from the Row in London where there are all those diamond merchants and like all those like high end shops. So it's rather strange that it's just, that was that close to that, the ritziest area of London.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there've been some articles about what happens to your body when you're like, don't see the sun for a long time. And we saw his beard was long and yeah. And they were dragging him and it was just very, and you hear him saying resist
mm-hmm.
Trump. Right. Which was interesting because I felt like he was kind of trying to appeal to the very people who are kind of celebrating his arrest.
Right.
I don't know. I did a thread on this, but you have like Neera Tanden calling him a fascist, saying it's fascism because he helped the Russian state, help Russia, which is a proto-fascist state. Malcolm Nance was really happy about it. Hillary Clinton is glad about it. Even Chris Hayes like joked about it. I don't know if you saw that, which really surprised me. Yeah, I thought all these people who were either like being cavalier about it or openly celebrating it, I kind of thought they would keep it more under wraps, but I guess they just don't feel any, maybe that's part of what we were talking about, which is how kind of the groupthink and the peer pressure and how no one is coming to this person's defense. So they don't feel like any pressure to not openly cheer for his arrest.
Right. And I thought Chris was just kind of joking.
Oh, you know, okay.
Though they might've been a little bit tone deaf.
Yeah. I guess I was surprised because I think of him as.
Yeah. I'm sure he agrees with everything we're saying.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, the,
yeah, yeah, Chris is not a Neera Tanden, a Hillary Clinton, a Joe Manchin, a Schumer. You're not. That's not Chris Hayes. I don't want people to think
Schumer yeah. celebrating, and not only Schumer celebrating his arrest, but then Schumer was saying, "I hope he's also held to account for tipping the election against us in 2016."
Right, which I didn't. Kind of yeah,
appalling and egregious.
Right, because isn't that not
a thing to say?
And what thing to say?
just tyrannical.
It's authoritarian, right? I mean, that's the irony. If I were Putin, I'd be so happy. Right. It's like such great PR for all the hypocrisy around this, you know?
Right. And Putin has always believed that this Western liberal democracy stuff is a fraud that just masks, an underlying imperialist brutality, that executes its agenda on places like Russia. And so to him, he's seeing the mask. He's like, this is just the mask off. You know, yeah, we're doing his work for him. You know, the reason he messes with elections around the country, and he does, that's part of Russian foreign policy, is to humiliate these Western liberal democracies, which he thinks are frauds, and which he thinks are masks for what's really lying beneath them. And so, yeah, to see it coming forward and to see people like Schumer saying, I hope he's held to account. And like, what's the crime? Like, we now, from Mueller, know that there was no collusion between Russia and Trump. And so let's assume, for the sake of argument, probably true that Russia, let's say Russia hacked DNC, got the emails, hacked Podesta, got the emails, and used some conduit to leak them to WikiLeaks. That's not a crime on WikiLeaks' part. We obtain and publish documents from intelligence agencies around the globe routinely. Often it's our own intelligence agency. Other times it's foreign intelligence agencies. We don't usually, if it's a decent intelligence agency, we don't know for sure that we're getting from an intelligence agency when we get. I'm sure that I have published. I know for a fact I've published stuff from U.S. intelligence agencies. I'm pretty certain I've published from foreign intelligence agencies, but it's very hard to know. And you can't require a journalist to be checking the employment status of every source to see whether or not, you know, they're a U.S. national or a foreign national. Or, you know, the question is the information they're providing you useful to the public and true? And if it is, you publish it.
Yeah. Which I think you and Glenn Greenwald have both made this point, right? Which is that if it's illegal, if what WikiLeaks did was a crime, then it's illegal for the New York Times or the Guardian or the Washington Post, all those people who further leaked it, right, or reported on it. I mean, if the information was so sensitive, then they shouldn't have been publishing it either.
Right, and they were also engaged in a conspiracy. You know, even if he's the one that interacted directly with Manning, like they were part of the same conspiracy.
Benefited
from it.
Right.
So in here, a crime, if that's the way you wanted to frame it, you could lock them up too.
Right, exactly. And so just sharing some of the tweets. Let's see. One is, I just thought this was the weirdest one ever. This is from Neera Tanden, the head of Center for American Progress, who I guess took a break from presenting Bernie as a hypocrite for making a lot of money. I just want to say really quickly, if Bernie Sanders wanted to not pay higher taxes, he'd be a hypocrite. Like if he were indicting millionaires and criticizing them, millionaires, and but also trying to get away with not paying higher taxes, that would be hypocrisy. But what he's doing isn't hypocritical. Right. I mean, I never know if people, I should do this like every week. It's like at the end of the week, a roundup. It's like dumb or disingenuous. Or ignorant or disingenuous, because I don't know if people actually, you know, I mean, when people are like, oh, you're a socialist, but you use an iPhone, that's pretty disingenuous, I think.
Right.
But this, I think actually some people may actually believe this.
Aren't iPhones made in communist country anyway?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I should be like, well, it's because I'm a socialist that I use an iPhone. So Neera tweeted, there are many cultists on this site, but the Assange cultists are the worst. Assange was the agent of a proto-fascist state, Russia, to undermine democracy. This is fascist behavior. Anyone on the left should abhor what he did, not celebrate it, which is like a real stretch. And then there was an Associated Press article that said the latest Russian President Vladimir Putin spokesman says Russia wants Julian Assange's right to be observed following his arrest. And Neera writes, fascists take care of their own. Which is so funny. Like she's citing an article that's Putin urging like the respect of someone's
basic due process rights.
Yeah, he's saying literally saying he wants Assange's rights to be observed. And that to her is an example of fascists taking care of their own.
And that's also an example of Putin trolling.
Right.
It's classic exactly. Putin trolling, because he doesn't give a shit about people's individual rights. Like he.
Right.
At all.
Right. But it's
and
but
he
it's,
knows too that the West doesn't give a shit, or he believes that the West doesn't give a shit about
right.
individual liberties either, that it just pretends to.
Right. So, which is why. Yeah, exactly.
So
which
say,
is
please respect, you know, please follow right. the values that you preach all the time.
Exactly.
And then,
right.
To, and then on cue, there comes Neera Tanden to make his point that,
yeah, exactly.
that they don't actually believe in individual, in these values for individuals when it's inconvenient to them.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, to be fair, it's like Israel versus other countries, the United States and Israel. Both of those countries really claim to respect rights. So it's much more hypocritical right. when they don't than right. it is when, you know. No one points to Putin or to Russia as like this beacon of democracy. So it's right. actually much worse when we, I think it's much more damaging right. PR. Then Malcolm Nance, who's what, I mean, I know he's like a fixture on MSNBC. He was in the FBI. Is that what his?
He's somewhere in the deep state.
Deep state, yeah. He tweeted a photo of Assange being dragged out and wrote about Assange, I hand clap, told hand clap, you hand clap, so hand clap. And then hashtag, I never know how to pronounce this. Is it Schadenfreude?
Schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude-licious. So he made a very clever hashtag yeah, pun.
That's really good. I mean, yeah. I guess he needed the I told you so because he's been predicting things that have been 100% wrong.
Right, exactly.
For months and years, so.
Not that it's going to affect anything that, also, any future like, employment.
I told you what, that the guy who was holed up so that he wouldn't be arrested finally got arrested?
Right.
Like, nice work.
Yeah, seriously. No wonder you're in the intelligence community yeah. with instincts like that. And the ability to see the future. And then he also wrote, a traitor says, what now? All caps.
Oh, good one.
Can't hear you over my, because it was Edward Snowden.
Also a traitor. He's not American.
Oh, well, no, this was Snowden. Sorry. I forgot. So then he responds. Okay, okay. That was just in response to an image of Assange getting arrested. Then this one is that he responded to a tweet from Snowden, which said, for the folks reflexively saying there wasn't any secret police, here's the reporter who was on the ground saying some of the arresting officers. Okay, I took a screenshot, so I don't know what the rest of it said. But the point is that Nance responded to Snowden by saying, a traitor says, what now? Can't hear you over my Schadenfreude meltdown. Someday soon you'll get a swift black bag I didn't realize how bad this was. Someday soon you'll get a swift black bag rendition by your FSB secret police friends, and I'll be waiting outside EDVA courthouse. Hashtag I would worry. Wait, black bag rendition? Is that a dead body or is that?
No, I think it means they'll kidnap him.
Right. Oh, that's good. Just torture yeah. and rendition. Yeah.
Yeah. And bring him to the Eastern District of Virginia courthouse is where they try terrorists and other.
That's so scary. I would worry. Hashtag Jesus Christ.
Also, the excess use of the hashtags.
I know.
It's 2019.
I know. Although I kind of like the Schadenfreude delicious. It's kind of good.
I doubt it, Tim.
It sounds like it's like some German hot dog brand or something.
Sure, he ripped that off from somewhere.
Yeah, some clever person. Then you have Hillary Clinton saying Assange must answer for what he has done. And then she says, I do think it's a little ironic that Julian Assange may be the only foreigner that this administration would welcome to the United States, which is weird because she's kind of reminding us that this is Donald Trump's government that is bringing him back. And she's like co-signing it. You know, so it's like the good Hillary that's in there somewhere, like the one that respects, like used to be a lawyer and used to work for legal aid. I mean, I'm just armchair psychoanalyzing her, but it's almost like she remembers that this is a bad thing and Trump is a bad guy, but but she also is totally on board. And of course, this is the Department of Justice is what initiated this, right? Trump's Department of Justice. The arrest just now?
Oh, no. Right.
Right. Yeah. So this was right. Because Obama's dropped it. Right. Because there wasn't enough.
They decided that the reed that they were trying to hang this on was too thin, and that
right.
you couldn't really do this without also charging the New York Times.
Yeah.
And Trump's team has just been like, screw it, just do it.
Right. And so that you have these people like Hillary, Neera Tanden, Malcolm Vance, who are cheering the Justice Department that they've been railing against for the right. during the entire, you know, Russiagate. I mean, during forever. I mean, everyone in Trump's administration, they've been railing against. I mean, to justifiably for kind of for the wrong reasons, but they're bad, obviously. And then Manchin, although he doesn't really count because he's not a lib, he's just like a Republican. But he, although technically a Dem, he celebrated the arrest and said he's our property. Schumer tweeted, now that Julian Assange has been arrested, I hope he will soon be held to account for his meddling on our elections on behalf of Putin. Yeah. So, I mean, is that a crime? I mean, so people bring that up, and then they also bring up someone actually on Facebook raised the point that there could be cause of action that fits, but the interests of justice and national security outweigh secrecy about crimes. I'm not sure what that means. Oh, so Mark Palermo goes on. George Webb's thesis, delay in Assange's arrest was to allow time for capture of the users of WikiLeaks' anonymous Dropbox. I don't know what, we could respond to that later, because I'm not sure about that. And what about the argument that this, I mean, people say this all the time. I was just at the doctor and I brought this up. I was like, oh, it's so disturbing. She was like, no, he deserves it because he broke the law. He gave the election to Trump and he caused lives. People always, I mean, they used to say this before the Trump stuff. They used to always say that Assange, Snowden, and Manning were responsible for deaths. But when you ask, there's not any examples that people give.
Yeah, I think you could probably find some irresponsible things that Assange did. I think he doxed a lot of Turkish folks that didn't appear to be remotely newsworthy. A lot of that flows from his kind of broader model of full transparency and publication rather than curating a lot of stuff.
Right.
I don't think anybody has been able to connect any of the information he's published to anybody actually losing their life. And I think if anybody was able to do that, we would know about it.
Right.
Because people would be, celebrating that fact.
Right.
Constantly.
Right. Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's, you know, I remember Glenn Greenwald, I had him on the show right after Snowden, the movie came out. And he mentioned how, you know, people when he was growing up, liberals and Democrats, moderate Democrats considered Daniel Ellsberg to be this hero. Mm-hmm. And I think he said something funny. He was like, if Snowden had done what he did under Obama, if he had done that under Bush, there'd be a marble statue of him outside of 30 Rock, you know, that MSNBC would have mm-hmm. erected. But yeah, it's very, it's just disturbing, and it's a weird, it kind of does remind, I mean, there's a lot of similarity in terms of the knee-jerk reaction or the groupthink of that we see with the Russiagate narrative. There's a big range of what you can believe happened or didn't happen with Russiagate stuff, but it definitely was like, there was not a high burden of proof at all. You just said whatever right. you wanted, and then you just see with Tanden, for instance, like throwing around the term fascist. It's just like, it's like you're a Russian bot, you're a Bernie bro, you're a fascist, all these terms that they use just to stifle people, delegitimize them. Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about with Bernie? Anything else that you're working on?
That's all I got.
That's all you got? Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. So if people have questions, I'm going to be doing a podcast interview with Ryan. So this was like a break. We'll call this a breaking news.
Yes. Emergency
pod. Free bone. Emergency. Yeah. Emergency. And it's going to be a free bonus because we can't deprive people of this story. It's very important. All right. So and where can people find you, Ryan?
All over Twitter. Find me on Twitter. Ryan Grimm at Ryan Grimm. Email me ryangrimm@gmail.com if you got anything good.
Signal.
You can DM me for the Signal, and make sure you read The Intercept and
yes,
watch us on.
Oh, they're all. You guys are awful too.
Yes,
you've been so smeared.
Yeah,
that's another issue though. No. All right, great, and I will see you soon.
Yep, see you very soon.
Okay, great. Bye. The Katie Halper Show is edited by Ted Reedy. Our theme song is by the band Cordova. And please save the date for our live taping with the podcast Struggle Session. That's Leslie Lee and Jack Allison, and I will be doing a live taping, a combo of the Katie Halper Show and Struggle Session, May 10th at Littlefield. You can get your tickets now. And our special guests will be Matt Taibbi, Jake Flores, and Jamie Peck.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.